Serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we did the Alamo. We will always remember how they died for liberty. Let's remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
That was the Sammy Kay Orchestra during World War II. It would have been hard to find an American then who hadn't heard that song, but I'm guessing you might be hearing it for the first time today as our nation draws its attention to the 75th anniversary of a Sunday morning that changed the world. One of the photos you'll find at hometownheroesradio.com is of two Pearl Harbor survivors and the reporter who introduced them to each other. They're all together on Oahu for this national observance. Chase Anderson brought them together after documenting both of their stories for Friends and Neighbors magazine. You've already heard from 95-year-old Wally Walling, who goes back to Pearl Harbor every December 7th, but today is the first time that his newfound friend, Chester Ski Bernacki, has been there since the USS Arizona Memorial was built. Ski was on the crew of the cruiser USS Helena 75 years ago, and he had no idea that war was coming to the Hawaiian Islands.
Oh, no, not at the beginning. Everything was fine and dandy. You used to go down to Fort DeRussy, play handball, go to Nanakuli Beach and the auditorium out there by Diamond Head, swimming in that big Olympic-sized, bigger than, I guess, a Olympic-sized swimming pool.
You swam in there, in that auditorium?
Yeah, a lot of times. I'd go on the beach, and being a seaman, you always had to get back by 12 o'clock. They used to call it Cinderella Liberties. And you couldn't stay on the beach overnight, you know. I was living it up. Yeah, I was assigned a 5-inch 38 battery.
Yeah.
And I was a shellman. And so we practiced. It's semi-fixed ammunition. I was a shellman, and the shells weighed 60 pounds each, and there was a powderman and a trainer, pointer, and a captain, and we had a lot of training every day.
Explain to us what that means as a shellman. What did you have to do?
Well, what I did is I waited for the powderman to put the casing in the gun, and then I took the projectile out of the fuse box, the hoist.
Uh-huh.
Which came up from the upper handling room.
So you've got guys a level below you who are sending these shells up.
Yeah.
You grab it
and
put it in.
Yeah.
And then they fire it.
Yeah.
December 7th, 1941. What do you remember about that day?
If I can start out this way, the night before, I went ashore with a couple of buddies of mine. We got back at 12 o'clock. I told you about that Cinderella Liberty. And this one buddy, real good buddy of mine, Charlie Cioffi, had the duty that day, so he was on the quarter deck. Had the duty from 8 to 12. And I woke up in the morning. I did my thing, and then I had breakfast, and I decided I'd go ashore. So I went down to the Foot Locker, and I broke out my shoes and put another buffing on them, and I was sitting there, and I got an uncomfortable feeling. And I said, I think I'll go topside and have a smoke. So as I started up the ladder, the general quarters alarm sounded, and it says, all hands manage your battle stations. Not knowing what the heck was going on, I dropped everything, which you were trained to do, and I headed for my mount, my battle station. And just as I got inside the mount, there was a big explosion. And I figured, what the hell's going on here, you know? We manned the mount. They reported to sky aft, went into director control, and we started firing. From what I understand, I think we were the first ship to get hit. It came over Ford Island toward the 1010 dock that we were tied up at, in place of the Pennsylvania, which should have been there, but the Pennsylvania had moved forward into the dry dock.
Right.
Which was ahead of us.
And when you say there was an explosion, I want to make it clear for people listening, you're not talking about an explosion on another ship. You're talking about an explosion on your ship that you felt.
Oh, yeah, the ship just shook, and I didn't know what was happening. You know, who would think you were going to be in the start of a war?
Right.
You know, but like I say, being we had so much training that everything fell into place, you did things automatically without even thinking.
And I want to ask about something else you said there, too. You know, you said that you were going to go ashore, and then you got an uneasy feeling. Premonition that something was wrong, or what?
I don't know what it was. I really don't. Honestly, I'm being honest. I said, I think I'll just go up topside and have a cigarette, you know. And as I did, the announcing system from the quarterdeck are telling us, man your battle stations. So being trained like we were, everybody headed for what they were supposed to do. And what was bad about it is it happened so fast that we didn't have time to set the damage control all over the ship. So when we got hit in the forward fire room, between the forward fire room and the forward engine room. Just put a big gaping hole in the side, and she just settled there at the dock, which wasn't very deep, you know.
You get to that battle station, and you're loading these shells, loading shell after shell after shell, I would imagine. But you can't see anything, right?
No, because we're inside the mount.
So you have no idea what's happening out there.
I had no idea. And then all of a sudden there was I forget how long we were firing, but then we had a lull. And we were told to go outside, clear the casings off the deck, throw them over on the dock, and cut the awnings down, because we had awnings, furled awnings, you know, up over the bow and the quarter deck and stuff. We had to get that canvas off the ship so it wouldn't catch fire and stuff and whatnot. I looked over toward Battleship Row, and all you could see was this smoke and the mortar launches and tugs running around picking up survivors and stuff. It was off in the distance,
right?
You know, but you could just see turmoil, black smoke rising. And at the time, if I remember right, when I looked over there, I thought I saw the Oklahoma capsizing. Mm. So then all of a sudden, here we come again, back in the mount, started shooting again.
So you're a 19-year-old kid. You come up to the top of your ship in this paradise that you've been enjoying for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this is what you see. How mind-blowing was that to look at that?
I don't know how to explain it. What the heck's going on? You know, even right now, I can't imagine how I felt. Even right now, I can remember a lot of stuff that happened, you know. Looking over this way and seeing this happen and that happen. I remember after the attack, more or less, I looked over to my right, and there was a smokestack there that we had a shot a hole through it and knocked an airplane down on the other side. And this guy, Wally Wallings, was in that tower, and I think he said something about, what the heck are you guys doing shooting at? Because it's pretty close to that stack, you know.
Yeah.
From what I heard, you know.
And again, you have no idea what you're shooting at, because all you're doing personally is stuffing the shells in.
I'm putting those projectiles in the gun as fast as I could.
Maybe this is an obvious question or a dumb question, but that probably has to get pretty exhausting after a while, because those are 60-pound shells that you're picking up and dropping in.
You don't even notice it. When you're doing something that you can do it, baby. I used to be in pretty good shape there. Oh, man, I'll tell you. And after the attack and them guys went over to get burned and stuff, you could smell the flesh from at the hospital when the wind changed and blew over the harbor. They moved us into dry dock, and it was a new dry dock they were building at the time. It hadn't even been completed, but we got in there, and they closed the case on and didn't have any facilities, you know, for this and that. And we had to do our stuff outside over the top of a 2x4.
What about when the second wave of planes came in?
All I remember is we just kept shooting. You don't think about what's happening. You're just doing it. You've had so much training, I guess. And then after the battle was over and the whole bit like that, everybody was trigger happy.
And I'm sure you heard and probably wondered, are the Japanese coming here? Is this going to be an invasion? What's going to happen next?
All I know is I knew Charlie saw if he got injured, because when the flare of the torpedo went up through the ventilation system, it come out through the exhaust, which was over the top of the quarterdeck, and I understand he got burned and he ended up in the hospital. That was the last time I saw Charlie.
So he's one of your good buddies, and you find out he's been burned from head to toe.
Yeah, and like I say, he ended up in the hospital. I never heard about him after that.
Here you are. This has all happened. You know your ship is damaged. You know people have died. And one of your best buddies is burned so bad it burned all the clothes off of him.
Yeah, just give you a shirt, yeah. The guys that did get burned, to start out with, we used to have inspections where they wore full uniform, whites. And then Eleanor Roosevelt come over before Pearl Harbor and had everybody send in three sets of whites. and cut them down so to where they looked like the Bermudas, you know, the shorts. And that was a bad thing because when the guys got burned and stuff like that, the skin was exposed.
So there are guys that are burned. There are guys that are hit by projectiles, the shrapnel. And as I read in Chase's article, you saw a guy who was hurt pretty severely on one of the gun mounts, right?
What happened is one of the guys, he was in a turret 2. And in order to get into turret 2, which was higher than the turret 1, mm-hmm. you had to climb up a ladder to get up inside the turret. Mm-hmm. As he was reaching up into the ladder to climb up, some kind of fragment or something hit that barbette and hit him in the chest and tore his arm off. So they put him on the beach. And then when we had the canvas out there, we took the awnings down, he was inside of one of those awnings.
With his whole arm blown off.
Yeah, dead in a doornail.
And you saw that?
Yeah, that's the only time I ever saw anything like that that was real bad, except when I was in Guam and it's all the Japanese dead bodies and stuff and whatnot.
So seeing all of this, is that something that makes you angry? Are you just sad? How would you describe the emotions that stirred up in you?
I don't know how it affected me, honestly. Like I say, I guess I was going into what they call that post-traumatic deal. Because I got to where I just didn't give a rat's butt, you know, about anything. I just did what I thought I was supposed to be doing.
What about the days and weeks that followed the attack? What were you guys doing?
Well, what happened after the attack, and we were able to, they put us in the dry dock, and they patched the hole in the hull, and then we went back to Vallejo.
And eventually, that cruiser would be back at sea. Ski experienced some intense battles and witnessed the sinking of several other ships. And then, on July 6th, 1943, his cruiser, the Helena, which had survived that torpedo strike at Pearl Harbor, met a challenge she could not survive in the Battle of the Kula Gulf.
The first hit, it took the bow completely off. And I think we were doing 15, 20 knots, something like that. And being inside the mount, I don't see what's going on. You know, all I could do is feel things. Of course, we had a light inside the mount to see what we were doing. When we got hit and the bow got blown off, the ship just started quivering and shuddering from the motion of going forward. And then when we lay dead in the water, we got hit with two more. But right in the spot where we had been hit in Pearl Harbor.
Same spot.
Yeah, between the engine room and fire room amidships. All the lights went out. The gun captain says, abandon ship. So we got outside the mount, I did. And I reached for my life jacket, which was outside. You didn't wear your life jacket inside. No life jacket. So I got down and coming out of the light into the dark, you could hardly see anything real good, you know. So I got down on my hands and knees, and the teak wood decks were crackling. And next thing I know, I was in the water. I looked up, and I could see a silhouette of the two stacks kind of bending together. And I thought, I better get away from here. I was told, get away from the side of a ship if it's going down, because it might suck you underwater, you know. I swam away from the side of the ship, no life jacket. I looked around, what the heck am I going to do here, you know? Still looking around, and all of a sudden I found a life raft. And I was really tired by then.
I bet.
From swimming. So I put my arms inside of the bales of line outside the life rings. You couldn't get inside because that was reserved for the wounded and stuff. So I hung there for a while, and then all of a sudden, here comes a life jacket, a Mae West. I put that on. Got that on. I tied
it just floated
on.
Right to you.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was just floating around.
Uh-huh.
And then I found a pneumatic life jacket, which fitted around your waist. You used a CO2 bottle. I tried to put that on to have it inflate, but it was dead, so I just blew it up manually. So I had a life jacket around my gut, a pneumatic life jacket, and it Mae West. So then that's when I was comfortable being alongside, outside the life raft. And then I looked over and I saw, which I thought was a silhouette. So I said, I wonder what the hell that is. So I swam over that way. I didn't know whether it was Jap or what. But as I got close to it, it was the Radford. So as I got close to it to get aboard, the ship got underway. Because the battle was still taking place.
Yeah.
And so it got underway. And here I am, you know, by myself out there in the water again. So I'm swimming around, and here comes the Nicholas. Fortunate enough, I got the head cargo nets over the side. I grabbed the cargo net, got on, and held on for dear life. I climbed up and got up underneath the torpedo tubes.
How long were you in the water?
I keep telling myself 2 hours, but I don't think I was in there that long.
Somewhere between one and two.
Yeah, you can't judge time. Here's another thing. After it got sunk, you know, here I am in the water, and the first thing that comes to my mind is, what the hell is my mother going to say about this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in Pearl Harbor, they didn't notify. At first, I was missing, you know, and they notified her back east in Massachusetts.
So she got a telegram saying your son is missing after the attack on Pearl
Harbor.
At
first, yeah, and then... Uh-huh. Found out that I was still around.
You know, maybe this is a dumb question, or maybe you've never considered it before, but had that Mae West not floated by, or the life jacket not floated by, do you think the outcome would have been any different?
Only the guy upstairs knows. Wasn't my time, I guess.
Because you were already pretty exhausted.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, when I swimming without a life jacket, the water wasn't really rough, but it was rough enough where it took a little effort. And then all this stuff going through your mind, you can't see. What the hell happened? You know, where's the ship? A lot of things went through my mind.
You mentioned your eyes burning, too, from getting oil and stuff.
Yeah, that crude oil is just like, almost like tar, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, real heavy, heavy crude.
This is a serious nightmare that you're living in. Do you remember anything that went through your mind during that time?
Goofy things.
Yeah?
Where the hell's my wristwatch?
Well, as I joked with Ski during our interview, maybe God didn't want her to know how long he'd been in the water. Ski had to survive all of that to do what he's doing today, honoring those who didn't come home by attending that special ceremony at Pearl Harbor with so many other survivors. Since most of us alive today were not alive then, I had to ask him what he thinks we should remember about December 7th, 1941.
People have short memories. They're already forgetting 9/11.
Yeah.
They're already forgetting that.
So what is the lesson of Pearl Harbor? What can we take? What should we remember?
Remember, Pearl Harbor, what happened and why it happened. You weren't alert.
One of the enduring images of Pearl Harbor, well, there's a few of them, but they involve the Stars and Stripes. You know, that Remember Pearl Harbor poster that went all over the country in the wake of the attack had a tattered flag flying among the smoke. When you look at the flag now, what does it mean to you?
The population of the United States should have more respect for it, for one thing. And everybody should try to get into service and serve the country.
For those of us who haven't had the privilege of serving, we still have the chance to thank and recognize those who have. You'll find links to other episodes with Pearl Harbor survivors at hometownheroesradio.com. And this next weekend, we'll hear from a collection of those voices. Thanks for taking the time to mark this 75th anniversary with Wally, with Ski, and with the rest of us today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping that you'll remember here on Pearl Harbor Day and every day that freedom is not free.